Wanted to do today is I wanted to take a look once we'll go from Me Rav Asher to Rav Asher, you know, same Rav Asher, but to Rav Asher Weiss's analysis of this Tosfos and Daf Beis Amud Aleph. Again, the Mishnah had said that there are two cases where we can't do Kasher Zamen. The Gemara on Daf Beis Amud Beis says there are two or three more cases where we can't do Kasher Zamen. We can't do to the Eidim exactly what they wanted to do to somebody else. But the two cases in the Mishnah were, if you're Me'idin Ben Grusha Ben Chalutzi, you say that someone is a Chalal, that someone's Kohuna is of questionable status, not just questionable, he lost his Kedusha's Kohuna. So we don't make the Eidim, when they become Eidim Zamen, into Chalalim. Even if they are Kohanim, we don't make the Eidim into Chalalim. That's the halacha. The frekt Tosos, but wait a second. If we can't do kasher zaman to the witnesses, doesn't that by definition make the testimony edus shi'atayach lazima? And edus shi'atayach lazima, the edus is not good in the first place. So shouldn't that mean that we could never ever have edim that someone's ben grusha ben chalutza? Because you can never turn such edim into edim zaman, because you can never do kasher zaman to them. Now the assumption of Tosos is, now, when we say Eidos Shiatayach Lazima is not a good Eidos, that when you can't be Mazim the Eidim, that it's not considered a good Eidos, it means not just that you can't be Mazim, it means you can't do Kasher Zamam to them. That if you can't do Kasher Zamam to them, that's called Eidos Shiatayach Lazima. So, how do we ever have Eidos of Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza? Tosfos had two approaches. First approach is we are doing Kasher Zamam to the Eidim. To the Eidim when we find them to be Zomim. How are we doing Kasher Zamam? We're giving them Malkus. And giving them Malkus itself is the Kasher Zamam. That's the fulfillment of Kasher Zamam. Doesn't have to mean exactly what they plotted to do to the other person. It just means punish them as Eidim Zom, as the Torah would recommend one punishes Eidim Zomim. And part of what the Torah recommends is that we Vahim Bina Kosa Rasha, that we give Malkus to Eidim Zomim. Second Teretz of Tosfos was, no, Eidus Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, we're not Choshesh, we don't require Eidus Shatiach Lazima. The din of Eidus Shatiach Lazima, that you need Eidus Shatiach Lazima for Eiduyos, is by every other Eidus in the world, but not by Eidus Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza. A special Chiddush Akra, that by Eidus Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, you don't need Eidus Shatiach Lazima. Those are the two approaches of Tosfos. Now, most of the Achronim understand that according to the first Teretz of Tosfos, where we say that you do need Yachla Ziman, the reason you need Yachla Ziman, that you need Eidos Shat Yachla Ziman, is that we need the Eidim to be afraid to lie. If the Eidim are going to come to Beis Din and have no fear of lying, when people aren't afraid of doing things, they're going to do things, they're going to do bad things. People have to have some level of fear. They have to be afraid to lie in order to deter them. That's actually not psychologically, it's not the number one motivator of good behavior. The number one motivator of good behavior is to actually buy in and to believe what you're doing is right. But we can't just work on an honor system. So we'd like to believe that all of society believes that it's nice to tell the truth and that's the right thing. And if they actually do believe it's the right thing, they're going to do the right thing more frequently than someone who's just doing the right thing because he's afraid. Right? If you tell a child, don't play with that toy because I'm watching you, and you're going to get punished, so he won't play with that toy while you're watching him. Then when you walk away, he will then play with that toy. But if you somehow convince him that he believes that it's bad for him, then he's not going to play with the toy even when you're not there, right? He'll manage to. But anyway, the pashtus is that in order to accept any eidos in Beis Din, the eidim have to be afraid of something. They have to be afraid of being caught. So the first Teretz of Tosfos is saying, in order to be afraid, they don't have to be afraid that they're going to get the exact punishment they're trying to get to give the other guy. They just have to be, it just has to be something that one would be afraid of. Malkus is also something that one would be afraid of. It's not fun to get Malkus. It's very, very unpleasant to get Malkus. We don't do it in America because the human rights and things like that. It's not at all fun to get Malkus. That's something that's worthwhile being afraid of. But according to the second Teretz, the din of Yochla Aziman is Xeris HaKasuf, that you need Kasher Zamam, and it has nothing to do with being afraid or not being afraid. It's Xeris HaKasuf, and therefore, when the Torah doesn't require Eidos Shat Yochla Aziman, like by Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, so mainly, you don't need Eidos Shat Yochla Aziman, you don't need them to be afraid to lie. That is the Pashtos. That's how most of the Achronim explain the 2 days in Tosfos. Now, day number one says Eidim have to be afraid. Day number two says Eidim don't have to be afraid. Says Rav Asher Weiss, I don't understand. Edom have to be afraid in order for us to believe them? What about Erechadam Bisurim? We always give the example, you go home tonight, you're right, none of you dorm, you all live at home, you go home, your mom says, I cooked you dinner, and you turn to her and say, that's very nice, where's the hashkacha? And she says, what do you mean, where's the hashkacha? Everything I buy is kosher, I go to Gourmet Glot, I go to Brach's, I'm not advertising for any supermarket, Seasons, Aaron's Casino Farms, I don't know, I go wherever, I buy kosher food, don't worry, everything's kosher. I don't believe you, where are your two Edim? I don't see witnesses that say everything's kosher. She says, you can trust me, so who do you believe? Who's right in this argument? Are you right or is your mom right? So obviously, your mother's right, because she's always right. But why is she right over here? Not only because she's always right, but she's right over here because there's a principle, Eidech Anam Bisurin, that when it comes to regular ritual law, we believe a single witness. So if your mom counts as a single witness and she says it's kosher, then it's kosher. But how could you trust her Eidos? What's she afraid of? Where's her fear? What's going to happen when she gets caught? Nothing. She's still the mom. You're still not. She's still the one that's paying the bills. So nothing's going to happen if she gets caught. Where's the fear? How could it be that there's even a daya in Rishonim that anybody would hold that any edus works on the premise of a fear to lie, of being afraid of being caught? Then the whole idea of Eidech Anam Bisurim wouldn't work. Or, what about Eidech Be'edus Isha? Eidus Isha means that Mishnah said in Yevamos that if someone testifies that a woman's husband is dead, she's allowed to get remarried, even if it's just an Eidech. We trust an Eidech Be'edus Isha. Because for Takanas Agunos, we don't want her Nebuch be an Aguna. But where's the fear? The fear of Onesh. You can't turn it into an Eid Zomim. So where's the fear of Onesh? And Me'echit is that it should be true. That you need to be afraid. Whatever happened, just trusting people. Cheskas Kashrus. Every Jew is assumed to be kosher until they're proved to not be kosher. So we're going to say no. Unless he's afraid of being caught, we're going to assume he's a liar? Why would you make that assumption? I would just assume, like I was saying before, the number one motivator for behaving properly is just by wanting to be good, by believing that something is good, by actually buying in. It's parenting 101. If you tell your child that if the reason your child is supposed to behave is, and there are studies that have shown this, I'll tell you a quick one. A psychologist went to a school and he took a bunch of preschool kids, six to 8 year old boys, brought them into a room with five toys. Four of the toys were really, garbage. It was like a baseball glove without a ball, or just nothing that he could really do anything with. And one was like this electronic robot, and like it did all sorts of things. And he said to the boys, to 22 boys, and one by one, different kids, he said, if you, it is wrong to play with this robot. And if I catch you playing with this robot, there are going to be significant consequences. I'm going to punish you if I catch you playing with the robot. And he went outside, and he watched them through a one-way mirror, and 21 out of the 22 didn't touch the robot, because they knew he was coming back any minute. 2 weeks later, someone else took those same kids out to the same room with the same toys, doing a totally different activity, didn't say a word about the robot or any of the toys, and walked out of the room. And 17 of the kids played with the robot. Even though 2 weeks earlier someone told them it's bad to play with the robot. But 17 of them played with the robot. Because what was the major deterrent originally? I'm watching you and you're going to be punished. If I catch you, you're going to be punished. Well, now you're not going to catch me, so now I don't care. But then he took another 22 kids, and this time he told them, it's wrong to play with the robot. He said those same words, but he never added, and if I catch you, you're going to be punished. He just told them it's wrong. And when he walked out of the room for a minute, watched them through the one-way mirror, still 21 out of 22 didn't play with it. 2 weeks later, the woman came and took them to the same room, and this time, 21 out of 22 still didn't play with the robot. Because they believed it was wrong. That was their deterrent, was that you buy in. The backbone of any judicial system has to be that there are some honest people in this world. It can't be that everyone operates with fear. It has to be that people are operating with some basic sense of honesty. So says Rav Asher, you're going to tell me the only reason we ever believe Edim is because what's going to happen if I get caught? Then the whole system's broken. If that's only... No, the real reason we believe Edim is because a Jew has a Cheskas Kashrus. He doesn't have to be afraid of anything. He has a Cheskas Kashrus, he wants to be honest because he's an honest person, because it's the right thing to do. So what are these two Deos of Tosos? So he says, Lanias Daiti Borum, the Koldivrea Tosos al Shtei Terutzehem. Both Terutzim of Tosos are based on the same premise. And that is that you need Edus Shatiyach Lazima not so that the Edom will be afraid. Oh no, if I'm caught to be an Ed Zomim, they're going to give me what I tried to give the other guy. No! You need Edus Shatiyach Lazima because the Torah says that there is a din called Edom Zomim. And whenever the Torah gives details within a system, in situations where those details cannot be fulfilled, the whole din falls apart. When the Torah gives a general din with a lot of details, you need the ability of those details to be fulfilled. Any din klali has to be something, any general din, it has to at least be ra'uy sheyikaimu bo kol prata v'tikdukav, at least possible to fulfill the details. Even if there's nothing forcing it, there is no general din without at least the ability to enforce the details of the din. That's Edus Shatiyach Lazima. Again, why is it that in order for an Edus to be a kosher, Edus needs Edus Shatiyach Lazima? Because the Torah tells us one of the details of Edus is that there's something called Zomim. So anytime you have a general din, and there are some details like a general din called Edus, and there are details like Yach Lazima, if you have a situation where you cannot fulfill the detail, well then the whole din falls apart. Rav Asher says, if you're not sure what I'm talking about, I'll give you five other examples where this comes up in Shas. Yeah.
Before getting that, just a clarification question. Where do we find, I know it might be from the Pasuk with Kasha Zaman, but where do we see explicitly that in the case of Edom Zomim, in the classical cases, that we do exactly what he tried to do to the other person?
That's where's the puzzle. Kasher zamam la'asos la'achiv means what he plotted to do to the other.
We have other psukim like ayin takasayin, shein takashein, where we don't actually take that in a literal sense.
Right. So but over here, it's not ayin takasayin, it's kasher zamam la'asos la'achiv. What exactly what he tried to do to the other party. That's Torah Shebal Peh. It's a chiddush of the Torah Shebal Peh that ayin takasayin doesn't mean ayin takasayin. But we don't have such a chiddush Torah Shebal Peh over here. The whole chiddush of Torah Shebal Peh is that this parsha is talking about dafka when you say imanu hiyisem. That part it doesn't say in the Torah. That part is Torah Shebal Peh. But it does say in the Torah that you give exactly what they tried to do to the other party. But this is a very interesting assertion that he's making. Meaning he's saying this is not a din about Edom Zomim. This is a din about the way Torah works. The way Torah works is that if you have a subset of halacha with a whole bunch of details, in order for that halacha to ever apply, all the details have to at least be potentially operative. Where else do you find this? So he says, for example, there is a din called Yi'ud. When one buys an Amma Ivriya, that he could marry her, to give to his son to marry, or marry himself, that's called Yi'ud, to designate her to him as the wife. The Gemara in Kiddushin says one cannot sell his daughter as an Amma Ivriya, as a Jewish servant, Jewish maid, to your relatives. Now one is allowed to sell his daughter, technically speaking. You don't do it anymore. Abe Lincoln abolished slavery. But one would be allowed to sell his daughter as an Amma Ivriya to some stranger, to another Jew, only to a Jew, but to some stranger. Not to a relative. Why not? What, she can't be an Amma Ivriya? She can't clean the house? She can't do whatever the Amma Ivriya is supposed to do for a relative? Adarabah, she'll be more comfortable there. Why can't you do it? So says the Gemara, because you can't do Yiyud, because she's not allowed to marry her relatives. You assume it's a relative you're not allowed to marry. And if you can't do Yiyud, then there can't be Amma Ivriya. Meaning the Torah tells us this concept of Amma Ivriya. One of the details of Amma Ivriya is that there's a din called Yiyud, Well, anytime you can't do yirin, mimela, you can't have a din of amivria. Whenever you can't do a detail, the whole din klali, the whole general din falls apart. Maybe the guy you're selling it to doesn't want to do yiyud. Still, it doesn't matter. If you don't even have the potential to have the detail, the whole general rule falls apart. Another example. Sanhedrin daf yud ches. The Gemara says there's a havamina that a kohen who kills b'shogeg, a kohen who kills b'shogeg, doesn't go to galus. Why? Because he can't go out b'misas kohen gadol. Must mean a kohen gadol that's hard to be shogeg, no? Because he's not going to be able to go out b'misas kohen gadol. So one second. So what does that mean? It's not just Gemara Sanhedrin, it's Gemara Makos. That if a kohen gadol kills b'shogeg, when does someone go out of galus? When the kohen gadol dies. What if you are the kohen gadol? Then you can't go out of galus. When the kohen gadol dies. Because when the kohen gadol dies, you can't go anywhere, you're dead. So the Gemara has a havamina. The Gemara discusses that it may not be that there's just one Kohen Gadol. It's definitely not that there are multiple Kohen Gadol. Okay, but the Gemara has a havamina that he should never have to go to Golgos in the first place because he can't go out b'misas Kohen Gadol. Wait a second. So what? He can't go out b'misas Kohen Gadol. He has to go to Golgos. He's chayiv Golgos. He kills someone, shogeg, chayiv Golgos. Who cares that? The detail of how you get out is not going to apply to him. So what? That's a detail. Elamai, what do you see? That if there's a din called galus, and one of the details of that din is that you go up and mises kohen gadol, then you don't have the ability to fulfill that detail, the whole din falls apart. The whole din won't apply. Another example. The Yerushalmi Maseches Pesachim says that it's impossible to give to Hegdish, to be Makdish something that you cannot be Poda, that you cannot redeem from Hegdish. Now, when you give something to Hegdish, sometimes it will be redeemed and Hegdish will just use the money. It's like a gift. Someone gives you a gift. So sometimes, wow, that's really useful. I'll actually use the gift. And sometimes it's like, oh my God, what the heck am I going to do with this gift? So you try to return it and try to get your money back, and you'll figure out what to do with money. You'll do all sorts of Mrs. Meissen Dovin with the money, but the gift was useless to you. So people give all sorts of things to Hagdish. Some of the things Hagdish would say, okay, we could use this, a broom. We could sweep the base of Hagdish with this. This is a very useful broom. And sometimes they'll give something, what's Hagdish going to do with a tie? We're not going to, you know, the Kohanim don't wear ties, and we're not. We'll sell it, or we'll get something else. We'll get something that's more useful to us. So not everything you give to Hegdish is going to be niftes, is going to be redeemed, is going to be bought back from Hegdish. So why is it that I can't even be makdish something useful to Hegdish if it's something that's ineligible for pidyon? Because part of the din of Hegdish is that there's a din called pidyon. One of the details of the din of Hegdish is something called pidyon. And if you can't do pidyon, the whole din of Hegdish falls away. That's why he says, maybe that explains why, according to Rashi, Ein Hegdish Pachas Mishava Pruta. What does that mean, Ein Hegdish Pachas Mishava Pruta? Oh, you can't be mocked on something less than a Shava Pruta. Why not? Why can't you be mocked? Is there no kinyan on something less than a Shava Pruta? Can you not own something? Is there no ownership on something less than a Shava Pruta? Sure, there is. What did the Dara Mabul get punished for? Because they stole from each other Pachas Mishava Pruta. But it's not even stealing. Yeah, it is stealing, because it belongs to someone else. You're not allowed to steal. If someone runs some sort of computer scam where he manages to hack into bank accounts and he takes a penny off of everyone's account in the whole world once a month, he'll be a billionaire. And he didn't do anything wrong? Of course he did something wrong. Definitely it's stealing when it's Pachas Mishava Pruta. So why can't it be that I can donate, I can contribute to Hegdish Pachas Mishava Pruta? According to this, you understand very well. Because you can't be poda pachas mishava pruta. You can't redeem from Hegdish pachas mishava pruta. And anything that is not betoras pidyon, memela is also not betoras Hegdish. Another, and the classic example has to be the din of Rabbi Zeira. Kol sharoi labila Ein bila ma'akeves ba, v'kol she'ein roi lebila bila ma'akeves ba. You familiar with this din? There's a din by a kabar mincha. How do you make a kabar mincha? What's a kabar mincha made out of? Flour. What else? Oil. And little known also levona is used in kabar mincha. But flour and oil are the primary ingredients by a kabar mincha. So there's no shechita by a kabar mincha. You can't shecht flour and oil. Flour and oil are the primary ingredients of kabar mincha. There's a certain amount of flour and a certain amount of oil that you have to put into a kabar mincha. And then the mitzvah lechatchila is to be bolel, the flour and the oil, to mix all the flour and the oil together to totally saturate the flour and the oil. Let's say you didn't do bila. You didn't actually mix it. It's your carbon kosher. So Rabbi Zeri says, halacha, if you had enough oil to actually saturate the flour, you just didn't actually do it, but you had enough that it could have been done, then your carbon is kosher. But if you didn't even have the ability to do the belila, you couldn't, there wasn't enough oil there to actually saturate the flour, to moisten all the flour, then the carbon is possible. Why is the carbon possible? I don't even need to do belila. So who cares that I didn't have enough oil to do belila? You don't even need to do it. It's not even required to do it. So why would it possible the carbon? This is Rav Asher, part of the same idea. That if there's a din called the carbon mincha, and one of those details happens to be that there's a mitzvah lechatchila to do blila. If you don't have the ability to do the mitzvah lechatchila, then the whole din falls away. The whole din klali falls away. Now the truth is that last raya may not be the greatest raya to this yisod, because there might be another reason why it's not kasher. In that case, why the karban mincha is not kasher. There's a machlokas rishonim / achronim about why it is a kol shein roi. And you might think it's so esoteric, you know, Baz Hashem will have a basement very soon, but until then, like, who cares? But this concept of kol shein roi lebila nila makevas ba applies in other places as well. The Gemara in Kedushin applies it to tevila. Why is it that before a woman goes to the mikveh, she has to brush her teeth? And she has to take any dirt from between her teeth, any floss. If she has stitches in her mouth, it's a problem. Does a woman open her mouth in the mikvah? She doesn't. She would drown. She doesn't. Her mouth stays closed in the mikvah. So why does she have to make sure there's no chatzitza even in inside of her mouth before she goes to the mikvah? For men, okay, man doesn't really have to go to the mikvah nowadays anyway. So we're not mocking about any of these things. But for a woman, we're very mocking about these things. She has to brush her teeth before. Not only that, is a minhag quote in Shulchan Aruch that on the day of Tevila, the whole day, a woman shouldn't eat any flesh. Why? Because flesh gets stuck between the teeth. Basar ben hashinayim. Basar adenu ben hashinayim. And we're afraid that's going to be a chatzitza. Aye, she could floss. Yeah, but maybe she won't floss well. The whole day. What are we worried about? You don't need water to get into the mouth. So the Gemara says, yeah, you don't need water to get into the mouth, but you need the mouth to be ra'uy lebi'as mayim. It needs to at least potentially be able to have water going.
Someone has braces, they'll never be able to go to the mikvah.
Braces is a big problem. I was just talking to Dr. Andrew Siklik, who I'm sure you know. He's a local orthodontist. He used to run the Yilk Teen Minion when I was a teenager. And I was talking to him because I brought my kids to him. And he was very excited that a rabbi was in the office, and he was, because he's a Talmud Chacham, and he always likes talk and learning, and he said we have to talk about braces and, you know, married women and braces and going to the mikveh, because he said Rabbi Forrest wrote the book on Hilchos Nida in English, two volumes this fat, each one is this fat, about everything you ever want to know about Hilchos Nida, every sheet you ever want to know. And he said he spoke to Rabbi Forrest about some of these issues and about some of the orthodontics that he talks about. Rabbi Forrest said, well, the information I had, and he said he read it, and he said it didn't make sense, the orthodontic stuff that he had there. And he called Rabbi Forrest, and Rabbi Forrest said, speak to the orthodontist that I spoke to. All my information is from him. And he spoke to that orthodontist. That orthodontist said, I must have been having a bad day. I got, like, everything wrong. So, like, everything in the book about orthodontics is wrong. So he said, we got to rework this. We have to work out the... But, yeah, it's a real issue. whether a woman who has braces can go to a mikveh at all. Probably not. It's a real significant issue. So, but what's it about? It's about this kolaroi labila. But wait a second. There's a din called tevila. One of the details is what? Is that you need water to go in the mouth? No, there is no detail like that. It's not even a l'charchila that you need water to go in the mouth. So this idea of kolaroi labila may be based on something else. It may not be based on this idea that whenever you have a general rule and there are details, if you can't do the details, you have potential details, the whole general rule falls away. Because there is no detail that you need water to go in the mouth. When we learned kolaroi labila, when we learned kiddushin in Rav Shechter's shir, he quoted the two days like this, the chakira as follows. What's the pshat in kolaroi labila and bila makevus bo? One possibility is you could say that lichavchila, you're supposed to mix the flour in the oil of the carbon. B'di'evet, if you don't mix the flour in the oil, it's still kosher. If you don't even have the ability to mix the flour and the oil together, it's so b'di'evet that it's not even kosher. He said his lashon was the mitzvah dies of malnutrition. I mean, it's ki'ilu like you've gone beyond, you've just gone past that line of b'di'evet to pasul. That's one way of understanding it. The other way of understanding it, which, by the way, which may fit with what Rav Asher is saying, that you have a din. The din is that l'charchila you're supposed to have certain details. When you don't even have the ability to have those details, you're just no longer in the din anymore. You've gone beyond where the parameters of that halacha, and the halacha falls away. But the other way to understand it is maybe different. When it comes to a carbon mincha, there are ingredients. Why do I have to bring flour? Why can't I bring cornstarch? Potato starch. I make a Pesach de carbon mincha. I don't want to risk chametz, so I'm going to bring cornstarch. Or potato starch. Kidneys would be cornstarch. But potato starch. Instead of flour. Why can't you do that for a carbon? Can you? No. Why not? That's not what it is. Like if for my carbon Pesach I want to be generous and I want a really good piece of meat, so I don't want a lamb, I want a cow, so I get this delicious, juicy, big, fat cow for my carbon Pesach. Is that okay? No. Why? Because God said you're not supposed to bring a cow. You're supposed to bring a lamb. So maybe that's pshat. In why, if you don't have enough oil to mix with the flour, the carbon's going to be puzzled. It's not because there's a lechachila and a b'di'evet and you don't even have the ability to do it, and there's a b'di'evet and a b'di'evet. God said you need X amount of oil and X amount of flour. You don't have it. Mainly, you don't have the ingredients that you need for the carbon. Tzad Rashbam writes in Maseches Baba Basra, you just don't have what the carbon requires. That's it. If that's what kolaroi labila is based on, Rav Asher has no raya to this yisod. The yisod he's trying to say is that when you have a general din and there are a lot of details in the din, if any of the details are not going to be doable, the whole general din falls away. That's got nothing to do with kolaroi labila according to the Rashbam. Kolaroi labila means that God says that the carbon has to be made up of X and you decide to bring Y. Well, you're not God, you don't get to make those decisions. And therefore, it's puzzle. Problem is with Rashbam's definition is how does the Gemara then apply it to tevila? What does that mean? That by tevila, there are ingredients to the to a kasher tevila? Yeah, I guess it would work. Not ingredients, but a kasher tevila means there's no chatzitza. It happens to be you don't need water to go into your mouth. Right, how does it apply? You don't need water to actually go in your mouth, but you need ro'i l'bias mayim. So maybe that's what God says. Tevila is that there would be no chatzitza, even in a beis hastarim, even in the mouth, but you don't actually need the water to go in the mouth. Now, if you understand it as like a l'chachila and a b'di'evet and a b'di'evet of a b'di'evet, well then, it's a little bit different. Then it's very hard to apply the tevila. Because there is no din l'charchila that water has to go in your mouth by tevila. There better not be. No one does it. So there's not even a din l'charchila. So it would be hard to say that it's a l'charchila b'di'evet and it's so b'di'evet. Because it's not even a l'charchila and a b'di'evet by tevila. Okay, but whatever, whether this is a good raya to the yisod or not, he's got these several rayas to this yisod. Another example, I skipped the first raya. He talks about an islandess being sold as an Amma Ivriya. Can you sell an islandess as an Amma Ivriya? What's an islandess? You know what an islandess is? No? I'm never in Kiddushin? What?
Not a man, not a woman.
Well, definitely not a man, but it's a female who never physically matures. Androgynous, you're thinking, is androgynous is both, as man and woman parts. Tumtum is neither. And tumtum is one or the other, but the genitalia is covered up or something and needs to, you know, but whatever. An islandess is someone, a woman who never physically matures. She never goes out of little girlhood. She never develops simanim. So at the age of 20, we declare her an islandess. We say, okay, it hasn't happened until now. It ain't going to happen. Now, can you sell an islandess as Nami Ivriya? Why not? Why wouldn't you be able to sell an islandess as Nami
Ivriya?
What?
He's
not going to be ready for Yiyud. And also, when does an Amma Ivriya go free? When does she get out? She goes out to Simanim. As soon as she gets Simanim Naros. As soon as she has Shtei Saros. As soon as she goes through puberty. As soon as she begins puberty. She goes free. But an island is never going to go through puberty. So she's not Roy Lotzeis. Bisimanim, Melech, not right to be sold as Namivria. Why? So what? Let her be a Namivria so she won't have a din of Yitzia Bisimanim. Now, Lamai, you see that when you have a din klali called Namivria, and there's a prat that you go out Bisimanim, if the prat can't be fulfilled, Mimela, the whole din klali doesn't apply. So he says, that's the vart over here by Eidus Shriat Yachlazima. That Eidus Shiyat Yachal Aziv means you have a din called Eidus. One of the details of the din called Eidus is that there's Eidim Zomim. If you don't have the ability to have Eidim Zomim, Mimela, the whole din klali of Eidus falls apart. So what's Tosfos in the first Teretz and Tosfos in the second Teretz? What's the difference between the two Teretz? And what are they arguing about? So he suggests as follows. In the second Teretz, actually, in the second Teretz, Tosfos would say that it's only when it's impossible at all to do Kasher Zaman, like Eide Ben Grusha or Galus, the Eidus is going to be Kasher even if you don't have Kasher Zaman. But it's all based on this Yisod. They only argue, they don't argue whether you need all the details to apply. They argue whether it's called that you could do Kasher Zaman, that you have Kasher Zaman when you're giving something else other than the punishment they tried to do, when you're giving Malkus. Meaning, the first Teretz Tosfos says, yeah, you have Kasher Zaman when you're giving something else, because that's called Kasher Zaman. The Torah says, the Torah's Mechadish tells us that giving them Malkus is also Kasher Zaman. Vayim bin HaKos HaRash is also Kasher Zaman. So it's not that the detail doesn't apply. The detail does apply. It's Kasher Zaman. It's just with Malkus. Whereas the second Eretz Tosfos would say that no, it's not Kasher Zaman if you're not giving them what they wanted to give to somebody else. But this kind of Eidus doesn't need Kasher Zaman. It isn't even a detail in this kind of Eidus. Most Eiduyos, as a detail, you need the ability of a Zomin, because Zomin is one of the details of the Eidus. But this Eidus doesn't even need it as a detail.
How can you split Eidus into different subcategories? Isn't the whole idea of the Kasher Zaman being a criteria for Eidus that it's a blanketed rule? Now you're splintering off from that. You're opening up a new rule, like...
That's a good question. I mean, according to this approach, the second Teretz is difficult. The second Teretz is difficult. 1 second. 1 second. Yeah, the way he's saying it is, the way he says it is that the Torah tells me two different onshim for someone who's Neid Zomen. One onesh that the Torah says is Malkus. That's what the Gemara in Amud Beis says, Vayim Bina Kosa Rasha. That there's Malkus for Neid Zomen. What's the other onesh? Yeah. The other onesh the Torah says for Neid Zomen is whatever he tried to give to the other guy. So what? You give him both? Meaning it's obvious from the way the Torah sets it up that there are certain cases where you get A and certain cases where you get B. So I guess what he's saying is that Mimela would turn out that you're doing Kasher Zamam in either case. It's just that in some cases Kasher Zamam means... I'm sorry. You're doing the details of Eidus in either case. Just in some cases the details demand Kasher Zamam and in some cases they demand Malkus. But it's understood that the details are either or, not both. So you don't need the ability to do both when the Torah itself tells you you only need either or.
An obvious problem with that is why don't we just bring that pasuk here in the Mishnah and then don't use kashas over here. Use the pasuk of Malkus.
That's what we're doing. That's what the Gemara comments. How does our Mishnah know that by Ben Grusha and Chalutza and that by Eidim Zomen about Galus that you get Malkus? Where whoever said Malkus? So the Gemara says, Vayim Ben Akos Rashi, the Torah said Malkus.
Where is that? It's not on the Zomen. It's not
here. Amud Beis. So it's on this mission. Yeah?
So, Fetzer Rosh is saying that since the punishment itself, Kasher Zomen doesn't apply, therefore we should never ever apply Eidim Zomen in general to Ben Grusha.
He's saying the general idea of Eidus Shiat Yachal Azima is that when you have Eidim, let's say, that don't know the date or the time, the place where the crime happened. They say, we saw Reuven kill Shimon. When? I don't know. Why do we throw those guys out of court? Because you're never going to be able to make them into Eidim Zomen. So what? I'm never going to be able to make them into Eidim Zomen. They're telling you the truth. They're honest people. No. If you can't have the detail of Eidim Zomen, you can't have Eidus. Chuck them. Right? But when they're testifying that someone's been Grusha Ben Chalutza, so we can do Kasher Zomen. How? By giving them Malkus. So one day Tosfos says that is Kasher Zamam, and the other day Tosfos says, yeah, it's not Kasher Zamam, but you don't need to dafka be able to do Kasher Zamam. You need to do either Kasher Zamam or Malkus, because the Torah says both. And clearly when it says both, it doesn't mean that you have to do both, because we don't give both to anybody. Clearly it means one or the other. That's what the Torah meant when the Torah said both. And that's what Tosfos must be holding in the second Teretz. That it's not that Malkus is a kiyum of Kasher Zamam, it's that the Torah says two separate onshim. You definitely don't need two separate onshim, so the Torah is telling me that to fulfill that detail of Eidus, you could do either or. Problem is, so why does he say all this? Because he was very uncomfortable with the idea that the whole reason you need Eidus Shatiyach Lazima, the whole reason why if an Eid says, I don't know when it happened, I don't know where it happened, that we chuck him out of court, can't just be because you need the Eid to be afraid that we're going to catch him. Ravash was very uncomfortable with the idea, did not think it was correct at all to say that the whole svar is based on that he has to be Yarei L'shakeh. And the only way he's going to be Yari L'shaker is if he thinks he might get caught. And he knows he's never going to get caught if he never pinned himself down to a time and place. He says, that was the whole motivation of this whole fancy shtickle Torah, right? Says Rav Asher, wait a second. There's a Rashi in Sanhedrin. Rashi says, the Eidim need to be in a city where there are other people that could have seen them. Why? Sheyisyaru ha'edim laheid sheker shelo yazumu. The reason you need Eidim to be in a place where there are other people around, other kosher witnesses around, is because you need the Eidim to be afraid that other people might come and make them Eidim Zomen. So Rashi seems to say pretty clearly that the yisod of Eidus is that there be a fear element.
Yeah, but then that could take out so many different cases of Eidus. Let's say three guys are in the forest. You know there's no one around. Those two guys can't give Eidus on that one other guy. It's just not possible because you know no one's around.
Good.
and they were intermingling aiding Zomen and all other aiders in Zomen. Very, very specific case. It's not,
right.
Like, it's not a normal case.
So, yeah, and therefore?
So, therefore, we're making all these ideas like, oh, because by these aiding cases it works, so therefore by aiding Zomen. It's not a blanket cloud.
Yeah, but over here we are talking about Edom Zom. They should be afraid that someone's going to make them into Edom Zom. It could be that that's only a din l'chadchila. Meaning, that, yeah, l'chadchila, the best way to do to be Mekabel Edus is in as public a place as possible. Meaning, let Beis Din know. We're trying a case and let a lot of people know so that if there are Edom Zom out there, they should come and get them. That will add a fear element to it. But it could be that it's not fundamental to the Edus to have that element of fear. It's not necessary and fundamental to the Edus. And we're going to stop here, but what I want to do tomorrow is finish up this sugya. I was going to finish up today, but we didn't have Gemara Shir yesterday. So I want to finish up tomorrow. Take a look at the end of this Tosfos and what Rav Shechter has to say about it in Eretz HaTzvi in Simen Yudalit. And then go weiter in the Gemara, because the next sugya we're going to do is on Beis and Beis. So then just keep going further in the Gemara. Okay? Have a great day, everybody.